This podcast is a project of the Massachusetts Cultural Council, a state agency committed to building creative communities and inspiring creative minds.
People were very curious to learn the story, and that's what the Centennial did. And by engaging through a blockbuster exhibition, new people, they stayed engaged. And not only just as visitors, but as donors, as members, as new board members. And we cast the net wide, and it's still out there.
Hello, I'm Anita Walker at the Massachusetts Cultural Council. Welcome to Creative Minds Out Loud. I'm with Chris McCarthy in Provincetown at the Provincetown Art Association Museum. Thanks for joining us today, Chris.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for making the trip. You got the sunny day.
We certainly did, although I understand it's always a sunny day
in
Provincetown.
It is always a sunny day here.
No matter what time of year. And I've been here in January and seen sunny days. Well, one of the things we wanted to talk about is that you have been celebrating 100 years of existence here in Provincetown, and you've got some terrific strategies that you use to really capitalize on this anniversary. We have a lot of organizations that have birthdays, and raising money is always job one, a campaign around a birthday, but you did a lot more this year, and I want to talk about that. But before we get into it, tell us about the history of PAM.
Well, the history is so incredible that, and I'll segue to the centennial in a second, but the idea that we are comprised by community and we're about community, and I use that term loosely because the American art world is our community. And when the art colony here in Provincetown was founded in 1899 by Charles Hawthorne, he came here to open a school of art. That's what really kicked off the creative juices here in Provincetown. The landscape, the light, have always been a source of inspiration, and they continue to be for so many artists, playwrights, Eugene O'Neill, Tennessee Williams. The legacy of the culture in Provincetown is so rich that we have multiple organizations that try to continue this. And here at PAM, visual is our mainstay, but we also have a school, which is a major part of our mission, education, artists who get to show and sell their work here, and building a collection. Those are really our three main pieces that have been the same mission since the beginning. It's never changed. We just finally can do it right. And having a good facility that's created to accommodate all of your programs and such has been a huge, huge benefit over the past 10 years for us.
You know, whenever I come to PAM, there is something special about it. There's something special about Provincetown. There is something special in the light and just the feeling and the atmosphere here, kind of a zen, if you'll pardon the expression. But the visitor comes into this museum and they can see amazing art on the wall, and it almost gives them such a connection to the sense of place here. But unlike so many museums that art lovers walk into, you really feel a connection to the artists here.
Yes,
why is
definitely
that?
This place was started by artists. Five major artists founded the Art Association. They knew that there was a need for a place, a repository for the work that was being created here. The town couldn't accommodate it, so they, like minds think, and they got together with some of the business people in town, Siemens Bank, who's been our 100-year partner. They were the first ones to kind of float a little loan so they could buy this building in 1918. And it was built by artists. The galleries were constructed by artists. The organization was run by artists. And the majority of our committees are made up of artists that help us make decisions from the board level all the way down to hanging exhibitions. So half of my staff are working artists, so you can't get away from it. It's here. We employ over 100 artists in our school a year, so it's you're by default, you're immersed in it, and you can feel it. If these walls could talk from 100 years ago, boy, I don't think we could be on the air with that, but
oh, I don't know, that might be kind of fun. So Provincetown art, that is globally recognized,
absolutely. And we have become a niche because that is specific to our mission. We can't collect work or show work, really. I mean, we make some exceptions, except work that has a connection to Cape Cod and the islands, really. And so that limits us, but it limits us in a great way because we are the niche for Provincetown art. So if you want to, but the caveat to that is that so many artists came to Provincetown, whether they came in for a summer, you know, Jackson Pollock, Lee Krasner was here in 1940. In her biography, it talks about how studying in Provincetown changed the next part of her career. And this place has had huge impact on many, many artists. So we can claim the same artists as the Metropolitan or the Whitney or MoMA. We all share these artists. But the beautiful thing is that these artists, many of them are not from Provincetown. So they came from Indiana, they came from Ohio, they came from Florida, they came from New York, and many of them stayed, or they would return or go somewhere else and come back. But you, once you're here, you get it in your blood and you can't go away. You have to just keep coming back. So our collection really, I think, especially in the past year, is a record of this incredible legacy of artists. Mark Rothko, Robert Motherwell, Andy Warhol. I mean, I could just go through the alphabet, and every major player has been in Provincetown.
And there is something indelible about this place. You were just showing me a couple of paintings that were painted from memory by
yes.
somebody who was here.
Who hadn't been here in 50 years, because you can't get it out of your brain. It's tattooed on there. That's that's what Provincetown is and does. And, you know, a lot of these artists are looking at the same landscape, but their interpretations are so very different. And that's the other beauty of whether it's a white line woodblock print or a monotype or a painting or a photograph, they have this most amazing resource, the nature and the beauty of Provincetown.
Now, you recently turned 100. I don't know exactly when, because you celebrated.
It was in 2014.
2014.
Was the centennial, yes.
And like so many organizations, when you come up to an anniversary, it's a great time to capitalize on it.
Yes.
And boy, 100's a pretty special one. So first of all, what was your menu? What was your strategy of things you wanted to accomplish?
Well, because we're seasonally challenged here in Provincetown, we had to capture the summer audience the summer before our centennial. So we really kicked it off on Labor Day of 2013, which was the year before. But we wanted to put it in people's brains that we were turning 100 next year, not to go away for the winter and forget. So we kicked it off with a huge party. And part of, and of course we had been planning for several years prior to this. We had many, many committees that had been meeting and how are we gonna create something that's not just going to be one thing. We did a 16-month centennial is what we did, and actually it's probably 18 months because it overlapped into 2015. So we hit the tail end of 2013, all of 2014, and the beginning of 2015. And because earlier when I said we're about community, when you're celebrating something, everyone wants to take part. So we figured, okay, if anybody wants to come to the table with an idea, let's put it on the table. So for example, the Dahlia Society, the flower, the dahlia, they wanted to do something, so we created a dahlia bed in front, and our color was orange, so they planted orange dahlias that were our signature color and flower for the year. Now they will keep doing that every single year. They were purple this year, so they'll do a different color for us every year. So that was one example. A makeup group that comes in and does tours with us every year decided to do a centennial lipstick.
This was my favorite, and I do own this lipstick.
In a shade of orange that was created by some of their students who didn't know why they were creating this lipstick, and all the proceeds from the sale of the lipstick came back to help us. Another big, huge push was the collection. We wanted to collect 100 very significant pieces of art to fill in the gaps in the collection. And when I mean significant, I mean Edward Hopper, Robert Motherwell, Hans Hoffmann, and the list goes on. And because I'm, I would have to say, greedy in a good way, every time someone said, well, how many do you have? My number was 87, and I said 87 for a long time, even though we really got about 127 weeks, because I couldn't say no. So I wouldn't, we met our goal. I was like, oh, I think 87. I'm not good at math, only counting checks, but. So anyhow, this really was a turning point for us in terms of people thinking of us as this repository for really important work that was created in Provincetown. And so once the ball started rolling, people were like, we unveiled them every few weeks. We would unveil a few more pieces so that people got to see, oh wait, they just got a Motherwell or they got a Hoffman. And then people started, it almost became like a competition, and people, well, if they're gonna get it, well then I'm gonna give one. And we ended up launching this past July our brand new collections book, which we hadn't had one since 1999, and our collection has essentially tripled since then. We featured an image of all of the PAM 127 works, and new essays. In fact, an essay written by Dr. Melissa Wren about how Provincetown is the birthplace of American modernism. It's a missing link. That essay has never been written, and we did it. And the examples from the collection were just, you know, the piece of the pie that added to why this is, it's a real theory, and it was a proven theory through this book. So that was, I was so happy when that book came out, and it's just a huge testament to the community, to people who believe in us as the holders who are going to preserve this legacy for the next 100,000 years
and more. So yeah. Let's just pause, because I think the way you were able to enrich and enhance your collection is really the legacy. Mm-hmm. I love the dahlias and the lipstick, yeah. But I mean the collection.
We had to get everybody involved.
The collection is that is a phenomenal accomplishment in that period of time.
Yes.
And I'm certain that we have other art museums in Massachusetts mm-hmm. that are going to be having significant anniversaries yeah. in the near future. So dig a little deeper on how you thought through that strategy, how you launched it. Once it gets rolling, but how did you get it rolling?
Well, in terms of the collection, we have a wonderful legacy circle here at PAM of many people who have left us in their wills. Many of those people have left us artwork. So part of the strategy was to ask the people who have already talked to us about leaving gifts if they would accelerate, because the gift had to be in hand in order to be part of the PAM 100. It's great that you have us under your will, but we want it now. And that's what we did. And I have to say, 98% of the people that we spoke to were like, yes, you can have it now. And they wanted to see it in their lifetime be part of this really important turning point for us. So that was how that piece worked. And then we did four exhibitions that featured the four times, you know, 25 or 30 pieces that showcased every single one of the PAM 100 pieces. And that spread out again into 2015. So we just kept going and going, and people couldn't wait to see what the next group of paintings. But every event that we did, we would bring three or four and unveil them at an event, because we did events. I mean, we had more, every event we did was a centennial, and for every partner that we had in town, we made PAM 100 stickers, and you got to put that in your window. So everywhere in town, these orange PAM 100 stickers, which are still there, which are wonderful. It was galleries, it was restaurants, it was shops, anybody who participated by either giving us a gift certificate for a raffle or a cash gift or whatever were part of the PAM 100 campaign. So we really immersed the entire community by whichever party we had, and we did special dinners, we did parties out on the lawn, we did have a giant birthday cake party, we did that toward the end. Our gala was both this gala and the gala before and the gala before that, all centered on a different aspect of our fundraising and the campaign, and why building an endowment in particular to make sure that we were sustainable was just a huge, huge piece. And so we focused, for example, this year, it was all about education. It was about our school. It was about our youth programs. It was about our adult programs. So everything, we kind of tried to target a different piece of the mission, collection, the education, and our artists, who are always highlighted at any turn. But it really became, from the carnival parade, we had a float with artists painting on the float. You know, we did everything we did focused back on the centennial, and we used it. It's like when you get a Kresge grant and you have, or a Mass Cultural grant, you have to match it 3-1 or 2-1. You just use that for everything. That's what we did with the centennial. Well, don't you want to be part of the 100th anniversary? We made cutouts of some of the members who were the original members, these big life-size cutouts, and they moved all around. They were in the galleries, they were in the street, they were at parties. So we brought those with us.
You were ever present.
We were ever present.
Tell the story about the photographs, the historic.
Yes. So as part of, typically we try to partner with architects every year to do a project. For the centennial, we partnered with Calvin Sow and Zach McCowan from New York, who spend their summers here in Provincetown, and they had this idea called Reframing Provincetown. And essentially, it's a literal frame. It's a double frame. One side of the frame has a vintage photograph of a scene in Provincetown, and the other half is empty. So you look through it and see what
it looks like today.
What it looks like today. We positioned about 30 of those all the way from the jetty out on the pier all the way to the East End. There were, and people had a map where they could run around, and they were supposed to take selfies, and then they hashtag PAM 100 or, reframing Provincetown. And then there was a whole series of photographs of people who came from all over the place who did the reframing project with us. So that became global. And then it has continued. And certain properties didn't want us to take them back when it was down. So they left them up. And there's a
they're
few of them
there.
Still around Provincetown, but they were in the cemetery. And you really had, if you had it, you know, biking was the best way to go around. They were out at Race Point. And we, again, it brought the National Seashore to partner with us. It brought private homeowners and shop owners who were like, what are you putting on my lawn? Oh, don't worry, you know, there won't get too many people sticking their heads through the frame. But it really tied the whole town back to Pam. And then we had an exhibition here where you could actually videotape or audio tape yourself with your own history of your time in Provincetown. So, and we had scrapbooking too.
Like StoryCorps.
Yes, so you could take your pictures or whatever and put them in a scrapbook, and we have all those now from the people who participated in the reframing project.
And it all makes sense because really, Pam is part and parcel of Provincetown.
Absolutely.
And everybody in it.
That's right.
And the fact that you were able to take your celebration and really make it Provincetown celebration.
Yes.
And not just everyone who's here now, but anyone who would be coming back.
Right.
Or part-timers or visitors.
Yep.
Amazing way to engage and build community.
And we did an exhibition at the St. Botolph Club in Boston of the century, 100 works that span the century. So we took it on the road too. I mean, because in the downtime, you know, when people aren't here, you weren't going to get away from us. So we did events in New York and Boston and Florida where we brought us to you so that you could learn about the centennial and not forget about it until you came back here in May or June. So yeah.
That was the celebration. Are there aftershocks? Is there a long tail? I mean, is there a lasting effect and impact?
Yes. I'd say that the impact, which is really started in 2012 when we did the Robert Motherwell show, that attracted so many new people who really hadn't either been here in a while or had never been here before. Those people are now more involved. Because it was almost like the springboard to the centennial. Here we just did a major Motherwell show that attracted huge audiences from all over the place, and then people were like, well, now what are you going to be doing next year? And all of the exhibitions for the centennial heavily drew from our collection. We partnered with the Archives of American Art from the Smithsonian, so we had objects and pictures and letters, so people were very curious to learn the story, and that's what the centennial did. And by engaging through a blockbuster exhibition new people, they stayed engaged, and not only just as visitors but as donors, as members, as new board members. And we cast the net wide, and it's still out there. It's still casting. And
so your donor ranks have grown.
Yes.
Your collection has grown.
Huge.
Your members and visitors have grown.
Yes, and our membership was even higher this year. What the residual effect of the centennial? We were featured on CBS Sunday Morning in May, and we also were part of a documentary that was just screened on HBO. So now we have national television in addition to everything else, which was the icing on the cake, because you think to yourself, what are we going to do now that the centennial is over? Well, television. And originally the CBS piece was supposed to air in the centennial year, but it got bumped to 2015, which was even better because it kicked off Memorial Day with us on CBS and 6 million viewers. So
what's your strategy to keep the new donors, the new visitors, the new members engaged? Now, thank you very much.
Yeah.
The gift that keeps demanding.
We have to just stay fresh and be creative. We just added 3 new board members on who have new ideas and new networks. We are constantly trying to not keep asking the same people. We want to keep them engaged, as always, but we want new people and we want new ideas. We have a lot of young people, both on our staff and present in the museum through our programs. We really love to listen to our young people. So our gala, instead of just being a dinner and dessert, now we have a dance party. And that's for younger people who want to come, and everybody ends up staying. It doesn't matter how old you are. So we've really tried to engage the next generation of Provincetown, which dwindles. It's dwindling, and that's an issue. So we're trying to do fun, exciting things here all year round that people can really partake in. And we get involved with anything we can in town, just to you know, be the film series. Windows are going to be, artwork going to be put in the windows of shops that are closed for the winter. We're spearheading that with the town. So we really have tried to get ourselves included in as much as we can so that we're constantly, you know, with new people and exciting new ideas. And every year I'm like, I don't know how we're going to top it. And we just keep doing it. So
because it's Provincetown.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a lot of the classes and workshops and everything from youth to adult artists. You're continuing to reinvest in the next generation of art making.
Yes, absolutely. We want to continue that tradition that Charles Hawthorne started in 1899, whether it's plein air painting or whether it's Hans Hoffman's color theory, whether it's a white line woodblock print technique, the traditions that were started here, we still continue. And then of course we've added on, and we do web design and we do gaming now. The kids are making video games. They are doing Minecraft, they're doing all that kind of stuff. And of course it's so easy for them to do this. And so now we've added a whole level of technology as part of PAM's offerings. We do how to stretch a canvas, how to market yourself as an artist. So we've really, how to write a press release. We've incorporated through our workshops and classes the need that these artists have told us they want, and when we can do that. And you know, in the summertime, people who live in Harwich and Brewster don't want to drive to Provincetown, so we have artists in their studios. So some of our member artists who live up Cape actually hold our classes in their spaces so that people from the mid-Cape can still take a PAM class off-site, and you don't have to drive to Provincetown in August, because we all know what that is like. So we've really tried, like I said, just keep broadening. Right now, our collection is up in 6 different venues, including Endicott College and Newbury Court and Concord, Mass. So we really have tried to just take it on the road as much as we can, because when I ask these people for artwork, I don't want to have to tell them that, thanks, it's going to sit in the basement, because that's not what it's about. It's about getting the artwork out, having it be accessible. And you know, anytime I hear, you know, rumblings of a Provincetown show somewhere, I'm going to get myself involved with that and get some of our collection involved as much as we can. And so our exhibition schedule is now into 2020, we're looking at, because now we have so many exhibitions that we want to do and so many other people that we're partnering with. So it's hugely exciting.
Provincetown Art Association Museum. Chris McCarthy, another one of our creative minds out loud.
To learn more about this episode and to subscribe, visit creativemindsoutloud.org.